Welcome to day 10 of the 12 days of podcast. This series of 12 perfect episodes is brought to you by the good people at Def Jam. Jeezy's got a new album called Pressure, which is named for how a rock turns into a diamond. Not the feeling I feel when we're trying to book guests for these 12 days of podcast. I really enjoy the album, especially track 5, which has the hook, "This is it, it's a hit, this is it, my G, this is it." And if you're one of those people who needs to hear lyrics to feel like an adult, look no further than track 12, American Dream, which features J. Cole rapping, and Kendrick Lamar is on there too. It's snow season, better bundle up, and by that I mean buy several autographed copies of Jeezy's Pressure, now available on JeezyShop.com.
Hey Jeff.
Hey Eric.
How are you?
I'm okay, how are you?
I'm okay as well. Obviously, we're all in mourning this week over the loss of our friend Reggie Osei, better known as Combat Jack. I know a great number of you out there knew Reggie, and if you didn't get a chance to meet him personally, I know that you felt like you knew him thanks to the weekly relationship that you had when episodes of the Combat Jack Show would download to your phone. The genius of the Combat Jack Show was the mix of knowledge and history and atmosphere. It didn't seem like an interview show. It was like you were invited to someone's family room. Huge shouts to the entire Combat Jack Show team, including Chris Morrow, Jonathan Mena, Premium Pete, Matt Raz, Dallas Penn, DJ Ben Hameen, and Just Blaze. All the iterations of the show we all loved were art and will surely live on. It was wonderful to see Combat Jack as the top trend worldwide on Twitter all yesterday, as well as to see Mogul and the Combat Jack Show at the top of the iTunes charts. So let's keep revisiting the content and relishing in its timelessness. Reggie's greatness, though, went far beyond his job description. He was a good man who loved, who showed love, who looked out, who openly rooted for those who weren't even business partners with him, who was a great father, a great friend, a great leader, a great champion of all generations of hip-hop, and, at the end of the day, a great man. I hope what we can do in Reggie's name is good work. Let's be better people, better friends, better partners, and better to ourselves, all in the name of a man who never stopped dreaming and dreaming big. Long live Reggie Osei.
Today on the podcast, day 10 of the 12 days of podcast, we have Lola, as in I love Lola.
I love Lola too.
Who talks about her journey from Albania to Toronto to United States to the world at large. She has worked with everybody from French Montana to The Weeknd to the ASAP Mob to Belly to, I mean, just everybody. She worked with everybody.
I love Lola because she, like us, understands how to create something out of nothing. She loved music. She loved these artists who weren't getting attention up in Canada and decided to do something about it. And she's the type of person, without any type of promotional background, without any type of music experience, who jumped in the deep end and decided to make something of her life that maybe she or her family or her teachers didn't even see. And I love that she would jump on a Greyhound to come down to New York. I love how she would get on that first flight down to Atlanta, Georgia, just to politic and meet and build relationships with everyone down in that scene, in New York City, up in Toronto, out in the suburbs, wherever it was. Lola made something.
I feel like this episode falls into the same category as Wayno or Sycamore or Lenny S, somebody who is just a boss and just made things happen from a very outsider's perspective, made their way to the center of the industry.
And she knows how to make careers. So
yes.
Salute to Lola on her long career, which, by the way, we should mention, started in hip-hop journalism. So shout out to Lola, who saw an amazing piece in XXL about the game by Clover Hope and decided that that was her way in because she was so emotionally attached. When people really care about hip-hop, you see the difference it makes. Lola talks about going to SOBs for the first time here in New York City to see Big Sean kill that stage. Well, on January 10th, 2018, you guys who get inspiration from this very here podcast, all of you guys who want to be Lolas yourself, come through to our show at SOBs on January 10th, 2018, where we are going to be telling stories, where we're going to have music, where we're going to have comedy, and an unforgettable evening for you guys to meet like-minded individuals out in that audience and connect and network and link and build and all of that. So get your tickets right now. It'sthereal.com is where they're at. Get your tickets before they sell out. It's going to be a great event. If you know our track record, you know you do not want to miss this. January 10th, 2018, itsthereal.com. Get your tickets right now. Jeff, when do you want to get into this podcast?
In a second, I just want to say that Peter Rosenberg is going to be on the podcast tomorrow,
day 11. Our annual Peter Rosenberg podcast. Jeff, when do you want to get into this one with Lola?
Right now.
Yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. Keep the Green in Rotation, a.k.a. Laundry Day.
Yo, what up? It's Jeff, a.k.a. Mr. Worldwide, a.k.a. Rand McNally.
Hi, it's Lola from I Love Lola.
Yes, the waste time, but it's the real. Lola, what's happening?
I can't get over your intros. It's so crazy.
Let me just say, we are so happy to finally have Lola up here. Lola lives.
We've been talking about this for so long.
A year now, I think.
Lola lives on the other side of town and is here fairly often. But every time we hit her, she's like, "I'm on a plane. I'm leaving right now." And you just got back from Dubai.
I did, yeah.
And you have the henna on your hands to prove it.
Yes, I do.
It's beautiful.
It's fading away now.
But
it's,
you had it done at the airport. Right?
I did. Yeah. I did. I didn't have time to get the girl to come to my hotel, and so my flight was delayed, and I was like, pull up to the airport. She was like, okay.
It's amazing.
I was like, yes.
What were you doing out in Dubai?
There's a sneaker convention called Soul DXB.
Yes.
And so I went there for Soul with Puma. So.
And everybody was out there. Biggs was out there. Don C
was out there.
Upscale Vandal was out there. A lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Pusha T, Teyana Taylor.
Totally.
Who did you link and build with?
I went there to link with the Puma international team. Mm-hmm. So I really like the brand, and I've been working on some stuff with them. So I went there to see their installation and work with their kind of creative team a little bit.
We saw you at the Puma section of ComplexCon.
Yeah. Mm, I was there, yes.
Yes, we did.
I was like, yes, yeah. I was there.
Well, let's get right into it. Where are you originally from?
Albania.
Okay, where in Albania?
A small village called Hoqisht.
Small village, like how small?
2,000 people.
That's small.
That's really tiny.
It's like a high school.
Yep. In America, yes. Yeah. So it's like 2,000 people. And then I was born there and I grew up in a city close to there. Well, maybe, I don't know, 20,000 people, 100,000 people.
How big was your family?
Mom, dad, brother. That's it.
Anybody? Was your brother older than you?
Yeah, 2 years older.
And you guys were settled there for how long?
We lived there.
Yes, but before you moved to...
I was 13, turning 14.
Okay. So at that point, you speak one language, right?
Two.
Which...
I spoke Italian as well. Italian. I learned Italian by watching TV when I was little.
What?
Yeah. So Albania was Russian communist.
Yes.
Until 85. And so they didn't allow any sort of like the propaganda was the communist propaganda is like there's literally all for all, like one for all for one or whatever.
Yep.
And there's no foreign... like channels allowed, and there's no religion allowed and nothing like that. And so the only channels that were allowed were two Italian channels, Rai Uno, Rai Due. I'm assuming, I don't know for a fact, but I'm assuming it's because Italy was like fascist at the time.
Yep.
And then one Greek channel and Russian channel.
Wow.
And so my parents speak Russian because the second language in high schools there was Russian in addition to Albanian. And I grew up watching the only two Italian channels because that was the easiest language to learn. Greek is like super different in writing. Like their alphabet is crazy.
Yeah.
And then Russian is obviously very crazy.
Yeah.
So
you don't know Cyrillic. You don't know.
No, yeah. I don't know none of those. But Italian was easy.
You spoke Italian. Did your brother speak Italian?
Yeah, my brother and I both speak fluent Italian.
But your parents do not?
No.
So that was just your little thing?
We watched television. Yeah, we watched like Sailor Moon and like all the cartoni animati, animated cartoons. And so I learned Italian like that.
So if you wanted to say something behind your parents' back, you just spoke Italian.
Yeah, but we didn't. Okay, though. We were never really raised like that. Albania's like they were very strict. My parents were very strict. So
I mean,
there was no talking
back. It's a communist country at the time.
Huh?
It's a communist country.
Yeah, it's a communist country.
Of course it's strict.
My parents grew up with, when I was born, there was no communism. It was socialist and then became democratic. And I think like the transition happened really fast. And I think it fucked the country over in some capacity. But in a lot of capacity.
The economy, not great.
Not good.
Yeah.
And so, but it was when my parents were growing up, it was like you speak against the government, you die literally. And so they didn't, there was, you know, they didn't raise us with like dream and be all you can become and be an independent individual and believe in style and you know
it's
yourself.
More like, hey, it's like grow up and you're gonna work at the jeans factory.
Why do you not have straight A's? This is an A minus. what is going on? No, we
what
actually
was
didn't,
going on? Yeah.
We didn't have actually have A's. We had 100. We didn't have like out of 10. In here, you mark out of 10, right? The grade. Mm-hmm. In Albania, it was out of 100. So you could get like 97 out of 100 or whatever. Yeah. I had to get 100 out of 100. Like if I did not get 100 out of 100, there was an issue.
Oh my yeah, God. You were watching too much Sailor Moon.
Yeah, I was obviously watching too much Sailor Moon.
So you did very well in school then.
Yeah.
But not perfect.
No, perfect.
Oh,
you No, I was perfect.
Oh, you did?
Oh, no, I was perfect. Yeah, I came when I first moved to Canada. I was in grade 8. A second half of grade 8, and I won a speech. Even though I didn't speak English, I wrote a speech, and I learned English when I came here. But I spoke like I had learned English from English books from England.
Whoa!
Doesn't make sense.
Like
so,
the Queen's,
like yeah,
Queen's
like
English.
proper English. So to try to verbalize something that's so proper into Ebonics in a way, like in slang, is really difficult as a 13-year-old kid. So I would say things to people that I thought was proper speaking, and then they wouldn't understand. And when they would say things to me, I just didn't get it, and
Holy
it was
cow.
Even more difficult. So in my head, I'm trying to translate, like you say something in English, I translate it in my head in Albania, then I think of what I want to say in Albania, then translate it back in English and say it back to you.
Okay. Everything is a math problem.
Basically, yes. Yeah. So, but in writing, it was easy for me because I knew how to write English.
Yeah.
So I wrote a speech, and I won a speech contest in grade 8 at the end of grade 8, and I also won like a mathematics contest when
Whoa.
I was in grade 8. I was really smart.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what happened? Smart.
I don't know. America happened. Yeah. North America happened. Everybody here is dumb. I'm just joking.
When you mean in this room, yes.
No, what, y'all are very
What
smart.
Language do you dream in?
I don't know. I don't know. It's just pictures, really. It's Whoa. Visuals. It's no words.
Wow.
When I dream.
So 13 is a really rough age to move at, period.
Yeah.
And you're moving across the world.
Mm-hmm.
What necessitated that move?
War of 97.
Mm-hmm.
There
yeah,
was a civil that was a civil war. There was a civil war in 97 because of the permit schemes in Albania, and so the country kind of revolted against the government because they lost all their money in permit schemes, and then the people, like the civil people, broke into like the armories and shit and took the tanks and the guns and started just firing out in the air. If this was like a video segment, I could literally send you guys clips and you could see people like shooting up in the air.
Yeah.
And then in 98, there was a Kosovo war that yep. NATO went in. So in November of 98 is when we actually moved to Canada.
When everything starts sort of falling to shit,
mm-hmm.
what is your mind state like? Like you've never seen anything like this before.
No, but it was like... It was poor, right? So you just, well, it's poor only because I know better. Back then, I didn't know any different. And that was just a standard way of life. Like I never had a car, never had a phone, never had any, like the means of transportation would be you walk to the nearest bus stop in the city, which is by the market. And then from there, you take one bus to the village. And that's how I went to see my grandparents. I don't know any different. I don't know of cell phones or telephones or car, like, of course there's cars, but not
right.
like, you know,
It's a luxury, yeah.
It's a luxury. Like, if you had a car, you're either a politician or a drug dealer. Like, you know, or you, like, I don't know, what is it called when they take people and sell them across the country? Or another country?
Like human trafficking?
Human trafficking.
Yeah.
There you go. So you were a drug dealer, politician, human trafficker.
Well, yeah, so when your parents were talking about, you know, dream big.
Those
Get
were not
human
their,
trafficking?
Yeah, they were, that's not what they were talking about. Yeah, so, I mean, I'm painting my country in a bad light, but, like, I was happy. I was very, very, very happy because I was oblivious to there was a bigger world outside of
right,
that, you know?
Right.
And so, I don't know.
I'm sure your parents thought differently. They were probably like, this is not great.
Yeah, no, I'm sure my dad had been to Holland before and I'm sure they knew, but I just didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So I just didn't know it of any different. To me, that was a great place to be in. So when people started like, and I don't think at 13, kids now at 13 know more than I know at fucking 32. So, but at 13, I did not know how a person could die. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't know the what a gunshot does to you or what a bullet does to you. And so you see people with guns firing in the air. It's like fireworks. You don't know. Like, I'm a dumb little, I'm like a book smart, but not life smart 13-year-old kid because I'm watching movies about, you know, they're all very censored and there's not, you know, there's not all the things that you said. We're not exposed to all the things that everybody's exposed to here. There's no internet. There's no computers. There's no searching. There's none of that. So when I'm seeing somebody with guns or somebody firing guns in the air, I'm not thinking, oh, my God, we're all going to die. Like,
you think it's
crazy.
A more fun thing?
I'm just thinking, okay, well, this is just what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that's just what it is.
So how did your parents break it to you that you were not just leaving, but going to Canada.
Well, we had applied for, it's like an immigration process that you apply for to come to Canada. And it was between Canada and New Zealand. But wow. Both of the programs needed somebody, like a relative, to welcome you in the country. And so we didn't have anybody in New Zealand, so we came to Canada.
Where you did have relatives.
We did have like a cousin, a distant cousin.
Yeah.
And they waited for us, and they like signed off that they were welcoming us in the country. And so we kind of stayed with them in the very beginning, and then we moved into a basement apartment, and then my parents worked their way up from there.
You went to Toronto?
Toronto, yes.
And what
outside of Toronto, Mississauga, for anybody from Toronto listening to this,
yeah,
it's Mississauga, because
we don't want to make start any shit. Right,
yeah,
right.
I don't want to start shit either. Right, I've said people are like, I've met somebody recently who's like, oh, you're from Toronto? What part? And I'm like, Mississauga. And they're like, that's not really Toronto. And I'm like, it is, but I'm not going to argue with you. Sure.
Yeah.
Mississauga. So
what is Mississauga like?
Mississauga is the suburbs. It's like Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
So there's really, it's just like you go to school, you go home. There's wide streets.
Does it smell
streets.
Like Jersey?
No.
Okay.
So
then
it's not really a fair comparison. Canada does not smell like America. So we're very, everybody here is going to be like, get out, go back to your own country. We don't want you.
Go find your distant cousins.
Yes.
Did you have Canadian pride like from the very beginning?
No, I think that kind of grows. I think pride is something that you, I didn't even have Albanian pride, because I would meet other Albanians and be like, yes, Albania to the death of me. And then have Albanian tattoos and Albanian.
Well, how big rings. Of an Action Bronson fan are you?
I'm a huge, he's an amazing person. And I love him as a person.
Because
I
he's
love
Albanian.
Him as an artist. I love him as a person, period. He might like me
you
because
Action
I'm Albanian.
Bronson pride, yeah.
Yes, I'm Action Bronson pride. I'm not Albanian. But I do support, I love seeing other Albanians. Like, my biggest role model was Mother Teresa, though. Not really like popular
God.
Culture.
You really had to like aim high.
That's
like,
yeah, that's like, my Albanian. Like, when I think of Albanian influential people, that's the person that I'm thinking of, right? But there's, of course, a lot of Albanian people in the arts, like Eliza Dushku and Action Bronson and Rita Ora and what's the other
Barack Obama.
No, there's the new girl, Dua Lipa and Bebe Rexha, and those are all Albanian, right?
Yeah.
And so there's Dafina Zaciri. So there's a few Albanians that have like that have advanced in the arts, but my personal role model is Mother Teresa. So that's my Albanian pride. It's not about waving a flag or representing a certain color or just really fucking with somebody simply because they're Albanian.
Right.
So I do want to encourage them and support them, but it's not really how I've been. So I wasn't like that about Albanians. I wasn't like that about Canadians either, though. When I do see a fellow Canadian, I'm like, yay,
yeah.
We're Canadian.
Were there any traditions that your parents kept up from Albania that you continued in Toronto?
I don't think so. Nah. Nope.
No. Shooting guns in the air.
Nah, my parents, like I said, my parents were very reserved. That was never really our, even like when, I think that was a point where like everybody was like arming themselves for protection.
Yeah,
my dad
yeah.
was like, nope, no guns in the house. Like that's not something that we do.
In America?
No. In America, I don't know what he would do. But in Canada, he's definitely not doing that.
Right.
And so what is high school like in Toronto for you?
Well, it was a little bit tougher.
Well, outside of Toronto.
Oh, yeah, sorry, Mississauga.
Mississauga, yes. Mississauga yeah. for me. It was cool. It was difficult because it was, I think that, and it wasn't just because I was Albanian coming into it. Well, at first, the difficulty was getting along with people from Eastern Europe, because when I moved to Canada in 98, that's when NATO went in the Kosovo war with Serbia. So all the Macedonian kids and the Serbian kids that were really had family being killed back home had some sort of a resentment towards me. And I'm from the south of Albania. It's literally 20 minutes from the Greek border. So I'm Greek Orthodox. I am literally not in the north. I don't have family fighting. But at the same time, I completely understand their resentment. And so I did have a few kids in school who were from other Eastern European countries that felt some type of way and kind of mocked me.
Really?
Simply because I was Albanian. Yeah. And so that kind of sucked, because I didn't know. I think I was too young and too uneducated to really understand what was going on. So I resented them, and I was really mad at them, and I felt really like upset and felt like I was being bullied, which I was. But
yeah.
Understand, I didn't try to understand where they were coming from, you know, so I feel...
I don't think that's easy for a 14-year-old to sort of, like, you know, understand the other side.
I think that now, I think because most 14-year-olds can kind of Google everything that they want to know about the world. It wasn't actually until much years later where I took the time to sit down and research what had really happened in Albania that I understood what the civil war was. I had a completely different understanding of it when I was living it, and what, like, how everything happened and stuff. So it was all asking my parents and then researching the doc, like the information afterwards. So yeah, now kids can just Google it.
Right. Yeah.
What the fuck is going on in the world? Get some answers.
So you're now in Mississauga, and what pop culture are you really grasping onto?
Goth.
Really?
Goth. Yeah. Limp Bizkit, Nirvana, Blink 182, Papa Roach.
Wow.
Papa Roach is so dark. Slipknot. Yeah. Korn,
oh my God.
Green Day.
Did you see any of them live?
Yeah, my first concert ever was Blink 182. Though I know that to the hard rock culture, they're more like the popular punk. Like, if you like rock music, Blink 182 is not your like favorite act, because like, oh, they're commercial punk.
But they were running things.
They were.
Yeah.
For like 16-year-old kids, like, yeah. And I was 16. I went to my first concert in the Molson Amphitheater. I was so excited. I used to wear really baggy, flared pants. Like, really baggy. I used to wear black chokers and, like, blue and purple lipstick.
Wow.
Yeah, it was...
Your parents
were
like, what has this country done to you?
My parents, oh my God, God bless their soul. I love them so much. I literally, every time I see a 16-year-old kid lashing out, I look at them and I'm like, I love you so much. I'm so sorry for what I put you through, you poor things.
Well, beyond your dress, did you start rebelling, like, as a Canadian?
No, I still listen to my...
Do Canadians rebel?
Yes, we rebel.
It's like a very nice society. Everybody's like...
We are, but like, I just didn't... my parents just were more like, we don't understand why you have to go to the movies, and why is it important to go to the movies with your friends, and why is it important, like, to go clubbing or whatever, which other kids did. And it wasn't... Okay, so for a lot of immigrant kids, there's no such thing... Well, maybe now, I don't know, but when I came in, it was like, you have the... typical, like, the Canadian kids who have born different races, just Canadian kids, who are really born in this country, and they know, they understand, like, they have a common sense of upbringing, right? They grew up with the same means, they grew up with the same influence, like, they're influenced by the same things, they shop at the same grocery stores, some of them probably went to elementary school together or whatever, right? Whereas I came in grade 8, I didn't know, and so I switched friends a lot. Like, one time I was friends with this group and then with this group of kids. So when I was like 15, I hung out with like the goth kids, and then at 16 I hung out with like the Gino kids. Gino's like the dance music, the super crazy heavy house EDM. Yeah, so I was into that for a while. I used to wear eyeshadow up to my, like, eyebrows, and Jesus Christ. And yeah, I was into that.
You
that
were doing
scene
a lot
for a
of
minute.
Looks.
Yeah, I was into, like, different scenes. I was trying to fit in really bad. I didn't know what was cool, and I was just trying to be a part of, like, anything that accepted me, really.
You were a high schooler.
I was a high schooler,
you were
yeah.
You had Hot Topic.
Yeah, I was just like, and it's funny because I know that I was popular because I was not one of those kids that had two signatures on the earbook. Like, I had to add, I looked at my earbooks when I was in Toronto last week, two weeks ago, and I had to add extra pages to my earbook because I was friends with everybody.
That's dope.
Like, I knew everybody in the school, but it was hard to have, the cool kids were still the kids that were like, genuinely knew each other and from like time, and they did things together, and they like went over to each other's houses and like ate popcorn and watched movies, and like the immigrant kids didn't really do that, you know what I mean? So it's like they had curfews, their parents didn't let them hang out after a certain time, so like you went to the mall at noon on Sundays, or like at the movies at noon. You didn't really like go to people's houses and stuff, and you didn't really do cool shit. And so then you see the other kids, and then you're like, oh, they're so cool.
Yeah.
So that was the kind of life that I wanted to be a part of, more so than just know everybody in the high school. But I did. Right. I was very social. I still am. And I was friends with everybody.
Reading through that yearbook the last time you were in Canada, did you see all the ones that were like, never change? And you're just like, oh.
No, I didn't read really through them. I didn't want to, because I was just like, oh my God, I'm so stupid. I was like, what? This is such... Like, I think that, you know, and it's funny because I say this to like all the young, I say it on my Instagram often, and I just try to make young people understand that like you don't have to change, but that desire to fit in is so strong. And I'm looking back at some of my pictures, and I'm like, I didn't need to do all this. Like, I could have just really been a hermit. I didn't even have to dress a certain way, listen to a certain type of music. I mean, mind you, I wouldn't be who I am today.
Well, that's exactly it.
But I didn't have to go through the stress of feeling inadequate simply because I didn't hang out with some kids after school. You know what I mean? Right. I didn't go to the movies after school with my friends.
That's perspective that you have now, though. So it's hard
I know, but it's just hard to, like, when I see young kids struggling, feeling like they have to fit up, you know, in a certain culture, it's like you really, really don't. And so when I read back those yearbooks, I look at how, in my opinion, how lame I was for trying to fit in. And I'm like, Lola, I don't even want to read this. It's so embarrassing, you know?
Did you go to college?
Yes, I went to university.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Sorry. It is a difference in Canada. And it's a difference between university and college.
Where did you go to university?
Laurier University in Kitchener.
And what was that for?
Sociology.
And what did you expect to get out of that?
No clue.
It was just like, this is like a thing, and I'm going to just.
Well, yeah, I went for psychology, didn't like it. It was too hard, actually. I was like, fuck this, I'm going for sociology. So my first semester, I think, curriculum counted towards sociology. So I was just like, whoops, switching over. This is too difficult. 8 a.m. classes, this reading material. With, like, not 300 doing this.
People in the class.
Yeah, like, I was like, I'm not doing this. This is too much. So I went to sociology. Social was the easiest one. Everybody takes social.
Mm-hmm. Did you enjoy it?
No, I didn't enjoy it. I fucking hate that shit. But I honestly and truly, I remember going into one of my really, really old emails, and I read a paper that I submitted in my third year university. And I sat there and I said, who the fuck passed me and why? Because this shit is fucking whack. Like, really? To read back my interviews from Hip Hop Canada and see how awesome I was at asking the right questions and interviewing people, and how people paid me to write their biographies and press releases, and then to read my university papers and see how whack they were. I was like, why? It was paragraphs that had nothing to do with one another. I was not making any sense.
Right.
I don't know. Like, it was not consecutive thought. What it were was you not arguing, thorough. Yeah. I don't know what I was arguing. I was just writing. I was just talking just to talk. I don't know. It was just, I'm reading the paper and I'm just like, this is unreal. However, I did recently read something I wrote in grade 10, I think, and it was my careers class. And it was what I wanted to be when I was older. And I looked at, they make you do like this, like a personality test of like what side of the brain you use more. Are you creative? Are you more business driven? And so I was on the creative side, and it said that what I would do would be like a tattoo artist or a writer or
human trafficker.
Nope. That wasn't on there.
The right side of the
brain. That was more Albania. That was definitely more right. Or I don't know which side. I don't even know which side of the brain. But it was more on the creative side. And then I wrote, there were certain things like that I wrote what inspired me, what I liked, clothes, fashion, music. And I'm just like, wow, I actually haven't changed much.
That is very cool. I had a friend in high school whose brother took one of those tests, and it said that he was gonna become a farmer, and he works in, like, you know,
farming
finance.
Oh. No, mine was very spot on. Like, even the things that I liked, and then I read that I learned how to type when I was 16. I was like, wow, I can't even imagine. I thought, if you think about typing, I type so fast that
Prove it right now.
Give me your computer. I think that I was just always knew how to type. Like, I can't even imagine. Can you think of the day that you did not know how to type? Because I can't think of when that was.
Probably like 5th or 6th grade, I think they started. We had a typing class, like, in school. I feel like we learned, like, QWERTY and all that.
My point is, do you remember not knowing how to type?
I think so.
I don't remember.
I'm also the guy who types with two fingers, but does it very fast.
No, I type with my eyes closed. Like, I'm just literally just like, I type as fast as I talk. So if you're talking, I'm like, yeah. I'm typing, but I just cannot remember the moment in my life when I did not know how to type. It's been so ingrained. Like, it's such a part of my life that I just don't even remember when that was. So reading back that grade 10 book of I learned how to type this year, I accomplished a few things, and one of those was to learn how to type.
Wow.
I
was like, did you have a flip phone at any point?
Yeah, at 14, I
and
think, or
could
15.
You, yeah, at 14, were you like you didn't even have to look at it, you could just, like,
no,
text
no, definitely.
Like, you're just like 1, 2, 3, 1, 2.
No, I wasn't good. I wasn't that good. I had a sidekick. I was good with a sidekick. Because the sidekick flipped up, and then it had the whole, like, keyboard, and you felt the keys.
Yep.
It was lit.
And then you just closed it with one hand and just, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
What was your first job?
I worked at an A&W in Country Style.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
What was your job there?
I was a server.
Okay. So
I worked there for 4 years.
Just learned that server is actually above hostess.
Well, A&W doesn't really have hostess and service. You serve wherever. Burgers. Oh, really.
Yeah.
Just like it's.
But it's like a drive-through sort of thing.
Well, we had no. See, that's in America. In Canada, it was just a burger joint. It's like Burger King or McDonald's, and it was a coffee shop and a burger joint combined together.
Whoa.
So we served coffee and burger. So if you wanted to get
root beer.
Yeah. So if you wanted to get a burger with coffee instead of root beer, we could do that. We could.
Wow.
We could
combo you guys that can do anything up there.
Yes. It was awesome.
Yeah. So by the end of college, where was your head at in terms of where you wanted to go for a career?
Well, I knew that I wasn't going to go to school going to get a job in sociology. That's for sure. Because I started writing for hip. I did my first show in Kitchener where I was going to school when I was 20. That was my second year university.
Mm-hmm. And who was at that show?
A couple of local people. Mm-hmm. Like I was, and it wasn't anybody. I just had met some local artists that I thought were cool, and at the time I was like, wow, you make amazing music, you should be famous. And they were like, well, it's not easy to get famous, you know, you need like a record on the radio. And I was like, why don't you just send the song to the radio? And they're like, well, it's not that easy. And then I was like, well, why don't you do a show? They're like, well, nobody wants to book us. I'm like,
you really did dream big though.
Really?
Yeah, because I think about that, like, because it takes a lot to be like, hey, you should be bigger than you are. Instead of just saying like,
yeah, I just was like, I think that when you're a fan, you're oblivious to how things work. So you're just thinking, if you're a musician, and it took me a few years to understand that everybody just called themselves a musician. But at the
time,
you're
talking to two of them, yeah.
But at the time, I just didn't know. I just thought, okay, if you're a musician and you make music and I can hear it, it's a tangible asset, why are you not famous? Why are you not doing shows? Why am I not seeing you in concert, but I'm seeing, I don't know, whatever, whoever was at
Papa
the time.
Roach,
Papa Roach or Blink-182. Yeah. Like, what's the difference between you and them? Mm-hmm. So I didn't know that people could just make music in their basement or they had a record. Like, I just assumed if you had music means you were a musician. If you're a musician, you should be on the radio or you should be touring. That's how I saw it. Mm-hmm. So when they're saying things like, well, it's not easy. Why is it not easy? Why can't you just do a show? And so they were like, well, you know, we don't have bookings. Okay, well, we can go rent this venue and we pay the fee and then we go book you as an act and maybe we get some other act and we get some break dancers or some cool kids that are dancing and then maybe I called Universal Records Canada and I was like, hi, I'm doing a show in Kitchener-Waterloo and I need some promo material, some like gear, some just like CDs and stuff. They're like, yeah, sure, we'll ship it over. I called United Way and I was like, hey, I want to give you some money. Can I partner you with my event? They're like, sure. I called HMV, which was like our music stores, and they were like, sure, we'll send you some promotional material. And ta-da, I had an HMV Universal Canada partnered event. So all of a sudden it was like a big event.
You're 20.
Yeah, I mean 20, but I had been in Canada for 5 years, 6 years at this point, right? Yeah. So it's like, it wasn't about that. 20-year-old kids now do some crazy shit.
Totally.
But it was just more so about, I had no idea what I was doing. I just said, why not? Like, right.
Which is the best?
I literally just went to the venue. Loose Change Louis is where everybody partied. That's what it was called, Loose Change Louis.
Okay.
We all went there on Thursday nights and got drunk. So I went there and I said, I want to speak to the manager. Hey, manager, I want to book your venue for an event. How do I do it? And they said, well, we do a bar minimum of $2,000. You make the bar minimum, you don't pay me anything. You don't make the bar minimum, you pay the difference. Great. So all I got to do is get people in here and get them drunk? Awesome.
Yeah.
Easy. So you just kind of learn, right? So I feel with everybody now being like, well, how did you do it? Oh my God, you're thinking like big. I was like, I said this recently to somebody. Actually, was it Jackie? Was it you? I think I sent it to, sorry, Jackie's Jackie from my team is here. I said, it doesn't matter where you start, just start. Absolutely. Right? Mm. And it's like, sometimes you just think, I have so much to do. Oh my God, you end up doing nothing because you think you have so much to do, right? And you just lay on the couch and be like, oh, I'm just going to do it later. I don't know where to start.
Agreed. I have so much of The Office to watch.
Yeah. Like, oh. I don't watch The Office, actually. Oh, I should.
I have so much of Degrassi to watch.
I haven't watched I Love Degrassi either.
Sailor Moon.
Yeah.
Yes, I have so much Sailor Moon.
That's a reference that we can appreciate. Yes. Yeah.
And so yeah, it's just, you just start somewhere. So for me, it was like, okay, I want to do this. Where do I start? Start with space first. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of build up from there, and I built it, and all of a sudden people were referring to me as this promoter from Kitchener-Waterloo,
which I love, by the way. It's not like you had to go to the big city to make it happen there. You were just doing this where?
Well, I created a niche. What I didn't realize I was doing at the time was that I created a niche in a market that was not saturated.
Right.
At the time, Toronto was obviously the hub. This is where everybody wanted to be. But how do you start in Toronto? How do you know what's cool in Toronto? I don't even live in Toronto. I live in Mississauga, so I don't know what the hot spots are. I only knew the clubs that I went to, you know, when people, other people took me. So in Kitchener, that's where I partied. That's where I went to school. Waterloo, sorry.
Yeah.
That's where I went to school. So I knew where to go on Thursdays. I knew where to go on Wednesdays. I knew where to go on Saturdays. So I knew where people hung out. And so I kind of went with what I knew, but without realizing it, I built kind of like a marketplace. And so all of a sudden, tours were happening across Canada. And people were like, yeah, reach out to this promoter in Kitchener-Waterloo, in the Tri-City, Tri-State, whatever. And I was like, okay, sure, that's me.
So you made the $2,000 for the guy?
No, I didn't.
Oh, you didn't?
Absolutely not. But I tanked it. I had to come up with like $1,000. My phone bill for traveling to the U.S. was another $1,000. Hmm. I lost so much money.
But,
and I failed 4 courses that semester.
But all that didn't stop you.
No, why would it stop me?
Right.
I mean, I just discovered, what I discovered through that show was that I got Hip Hop Canada to sponsor. And at the time, Hip Hop Canada was like the biggest, it was like the Canadian holy grail for rap music. Mm-hmm. And so when I was reading their interviews and aesthetically and creatively and just content wise what they were doing, I remember reaching out to one of my friends and I said, yeah, sir, I really, my dream is to write for Hip Hop Canada. And he was like, what? And I was like, that is my goal. That is my dream. I want to write for Bob Canada. He was like, okay. Hold on. Let me just call Jesse. Yeah. Like, you want to intern? Like, okay, I got you. And I got a college radio show, a university radio show as well. Mm-hmm. So I learned how to produce a radio show by myself. I was very proud of that. I still have the CDs of the music I played.
What was your on-air name?
No, I didn't have an on-air name. It was like a semester of having a radio. It was like Lola has a radio show type of thing. Nothing it's a long crazy. Name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lola, I love Lola's just, radio show. Yeah.
It wasn't I Love Lola at the time. I became I Love Lola later after that. But I just had a show and it was cool because I remember having Cardinal Official, who was really, really big.
Yeah.
He called in once and I had a bunch of other rappers call in. And I'm like, wow, how did I even get all these people back then? I was nobody.
But did you know them? I mean, or
I don't know. I don't remember. Okay. I don't know how they even got on my show. I just remember Cardi calling in one day.
It wasn't like Eric pretending to be Cardinal for the show?
No, it wasn't him. It was definitely Cardi. I've known Cardi for a few years, for a long time now. So yeah, I think maybe through writing for Bob Canada, I really don't remember how some of these guests got on my show, but they did. And I started writing for Bob Canada and I was making subs on campus for a Subway.
Mm-hmm. Were you good?
I was pretty good. I worked in pajamas.
This was, you cut almost all the way through the loaf, or this was when they did it like in a V?
There's no V. You cut through the loaf. That's it. But yes, I was working at Subway on campus, and then I was working at a bank off campus, Scotiabank, and then I was working at A&W Country Style still in back home in Toronto.
You were doing all three jobs at the same time?
5. And then I was
such an immigrant.
And then I was working at Topshop, which was a bootleg Topshop. It wasn't the real one. Okay. It was called Limite, but it was a different brand in Square One, which is a mall that was by my house. And then I also worked at a bank, the same bank, but in Toronto. So I worked part-time shifts wherever I was needed. And then I did the interviews for Pop Canada.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Holy shit. So your parents thought at this time what?
That I was just going through university. Like, they're like, oh, she's going to get a job. And like, this was a hobby. They didn't even know what I did. Like, I didn't even keep them involved or in the loop. Like, they didn't know. I was just doing this on my own. I would do interviews over the phone. So I remember this one specific occasion. I was interviewing Chameleon Air. And I was working at Topshop. Well, let's say Limite in Square One in the mall. And my interview was set for 2 p.m. So I set up my lunch break. And so the interview would be Universal Canada would say, we have a time slot for interviews. You can get this slot. So I said, I can do 2 p.m. to whatever p.m. Because I worked at the store, it was like a clothing store. I was like, hey, I'm taking my lunch break at 2. I remember going outside in the parking lot and doing the interview with Chameleon Air over the phone. Mm. And then going back to my shift. And then getting home after my shift. And then transcribing the interview and submitting it the very next day.
Wow.
And then I went to work the day after. And then another interview. At first, they were like Jesse, who runs Hip Hop Canada. At first, Jesse was assigning me artists that were not anywhere. Like, they were not popping. They didn't have any material. They would literally, the way people send press, because I became the writing director after a while, and I was the one that was getting all the press kits. People would just send, like, you know, physical press kits at the time. So it was like CDs with like a pamphlet and like press or whatever. And so you'd get these press kits, and that is all you know about the artist. That is it. So you got to come up with your own questions. You have to figure out how to do a cool enough interview.
Right.
I was like, nope. No problem. I will interview. I will make an amazing article out of this. And so then I went, I kind of worked my way up and I started interviewing the bigger acts after.
Who were some of your favorite interviews at the time?
Oh my God, Tony Yayo interview was lit. I love that interview.
In person or?
No, it was over the phone. Uh-huh. It's actually available on YouTube. It's on like an old channel of mine. I heard it and I was like, yo, I was so brazen. I had some fire shit. I had some pretty like, I didn't realize how confrontational I was when I was asking my questions. Like I didn't know how to, I didn't have a filter, so mm-hmm. I kind of just ask whatever what I wanted to know. Him? I don't remember. You have to go read the listen to the interview. Okay. Actually, no, but I remember asking Cardi a bunch of questions, and I read the interview back, and I was like, wow, I would put people on the spot. I recently saw T.I. in a studio in Atlanta, in L.A., and I was like, you know, I interviewed you like 10 years ago, and I asked you some questions that kind of I thought you wanted to kill me. It's like, what'd you ask me? I was like, it's okay, let's not talk about that.
Did you think that there was a long future for you in hip-hop journalism after that?
Yeah, hell yeah. I wanted to be like, there's a writer by the name of Clover Hope.
Yeah.
Oh my God, of course.
I don't know her personally. Oh, but
she lives in New York.
Jezebel now, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so she wrote an article on XXL about the game. Mm-hmm. It was a game cover on XXL. I cried on the plane reading that article. Wow. I cry about every time I read about successful stuff or like people who made it and like just shit that touches you, like even like sick kids, puppies, like, or like people who just accomplished what they wanted. Like
you're always crying.
I'm like, I just choke up with excitement and like just I feel passionate about it.
Right.
So she wrote this article about the game, and I literally was like crying on the plane. I was like, I love her. I want to be like her.
Wow.
So, and I remember being like sending all my interviews and my clips and everything to like journalists and editors in the States, and I never got any position as a writer up here, which kind of sucked.
That
so.
Does suck.
So yeah. Then what was the backup?
I didn't have a backup. I didn't have a plan of I want to be the best. I just wanted to write. I just loved writing. And then it went from, because I became kind of like the it writer in Toronto, it got to the point where Canadian artists wanted to be interviewed by me because being interviewed by me put them on kind of thing. So they would come and drop me off their press kits or be like, hey, can we do an interview together? And then if they didn't get an interview with me, they'd be like, can we hire you to write our biography? And I'm like, okay.
So you're living in Toronto at the time?
Mm-hmm, yeah. And
what's the scene like at that time?
Well, I mean, there was a lot of younger artists coming up that are not really so much around anymore. Mm-hmm. They're not really making music anymore, but it was bubbling. It was just more the hip-hop that was coming out at the time was very I want to say New York influenced.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the trouble that a lot of artists had was that their portrayal of the hard times in Toronto or in Canada were not coming across in the US, because everybody sees Canada as this peaceful land. And there are situations where, I mean, I don't know if you guys have heard recently, there's been some serious shit going down in the streets in Toronto. But again, because there was no social media, no way to find out about it, you didn't really know. People didn't really take trips to Toronto to be like, yo, let me go see the streets and see the scene. And so when you have this Canadian rappers thinking that, well, if New York artists are talking about it and Atlanta artists are talking about it, why can't we talk about it? And Americans are like, the hood? Seriously? You're from Canada, bro.
We had Director X on. And he said that there was like direct like lyrics that were just like about the New York City suburbs. He was just like, why do I hear this up here?
Yeah, exactly. And so, but it was about New York City suburbs, and then some people really try to talk about what they were going through, but again, it didn't come across because people think Canada is peaceful and happy, and generally it is. So the audience, the wider audience or the commercial audience or the average fan was not connecting. If they're going to listen to Jay-Z, why are they going to listen to X artists coming from Toronto talking about Toronto hardships? They're not from Toronto. Canada has 30 million people in total. Even if everybody in Canada listened to you, it still wouldn't be enough. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? To go toe-to-toe with somebody in the States.
Mm-hmm.
So even if everybody in Canada could relate to your lyrics, people in the US and globally probably couldn't, because they were not. Whereas certain things in New York, like Brooklyn and the Bronx, have become historical spots that everybody wants, whether they lived it or not, they feel like they can relate to you because they know the places.
Right.
Canada didn't really have a spotlight, or Toronto didn't have a spotlight like that on it. And so nobody could relate to what Canadian artists were saying at the time.
Did you go to any of the battles, like the King of the Dot?
Yeah, I've went to a couple. I mean, I've interviewed a lot of those artists way early on. So Bishop Brigante, long time friend, been on him for a minute, you know? And so, yeah.
How does everything change once Drake puts out October's Very Own?
Oh my God. Once Drake had released music, Drake was making music in Canada. Once Drake received international recognition and success, that's when everybody started looking at Canada different. I mean, you have to keep in mind, Belly was making music before that as well, yeah. And he had been winning Junos, and he was traveling in the U.S., and it was kind of like the commercial success is still really hard to achieve with international audiences. So when Drake was able, got that recognition, it was like a victory for the whole country, because then everybody was like, this guy came out of Canada, Toronto got this kind of talent, what else is out there, you know? And so it put a spotlight on the city
beyond the double XLs and the vibes and the complexes. Like, what did, you know, the new music cartel with, like, you know, Not Right and Misinfo, mm-hmm. and
mm-hmm. I Love Lola. .net. Yeah, I was in there too. Don't leave me behind.
But no, clearly. But what did the with all due respect to, you know, to you and yeah. Canada, what did the blogs that were centered in the U.S. mean?
Oh my God, it meant everything. Artists would want to pay me just to get them on the blogs, and I'm like, I do not compromise content for money.
Right.
It meant, like, being on Two Dope Boys meant a cosign, meant mm-hmm. like you made it, you know? So people strived for that. I came working in media and working in PR, came to realize that a simple posting, it doesn't mean shit. It doesn't have to be on the New Music Cartel. It doesn't have to be on, even if it is on, sorry, New Music Cartel or Pitchfork or Vibe or XXL or whatever. If the people who are writing about it don't genuinely fuck with you, it kind of comes across, you know? And mm-hmm. so, yeah, I mean, but at the time, getting on those blogs was everything. It was more important than being on the Vibe. Being on XXL and Vibe was like, if you had no other content to back it up, it was pointless. So right. Your first step was in New Music Cartels, because at the time, they were the connoisseurs. Mm-hmm. Magazines did pieces because they did pieces. But those were the connoisseurs of music. That's what differentiated, like, people fucking with you versus people not fucking with you. So when I wrote for Smoking Section, for example, mm-hmm. I was writing for Hip Hop Canada, Swag News at the time, this other magazine, Cream World magazine, Smoking Section, some magazine in LA. I was contributing to, like, a bunch of, like, underground magazines, and Smoking Section was like the spot. John Gotti, love him to mm-hmm. death. John never compromised. He was like, the way he ran Smoking Section was that if you fucked with it and you felt passionate about it, go ahead, write about it. And that's how I felt about when I did my blog. It was, I wanted to write, all the writers that I, or the bloggers that I brought in was, I don't care if it's corny, I don't care if it's whack. If you like it and you can justify posting about it, then you go ahead and post about it. And I remember traveling to Atlanta in 2006 or 2008, 2006. And staying there for a minute for like 6 months. And I remember going to see Yellow Wolf at Lenny's Pub. And I was like, I was mind blown. His performance was amazing. I had known about him long time ago. I mean, a while before that, but I'd never seen him perform. And I was like, yo, he's amazing. And I'm like, John, can I write about it? Gotti, can I write about it? And he was like, hell yeah. If you fuck with it, go ahead. I recently just tweeted something, actually. I found an interview I did with A Dream 10 years ago on Smoking Section.
Whoa.
And I was like, yo, mind blown. Like, that was so long ago. Where yeah. the fuck did the years go? But so, even B.O.B., I saw B.O.B. perform at the Underground, and again, like 10 years ago. And I was like, I want to write about him. TJ ZJ's was managing him, or is managing him. I was like, yo, I want to write about him. He's like, yo, come through at the Underground, check him out. I was like, Bob, I love, he had I'll Be in the Sky was the song that he was promoting mm-hmm. a long time ago.
Yeah.
So I was like, I want to write about him. And John Gotti was like, fuck yeah, whatever you feel like, go ahead.
So who are some of the executives that you met down in Atlanta? Did you meet KP?
Yeah. I've known KP for a minute. Jason Jeter, Chaka mm-hmm. Zulu, Polo the Don. Like, I'm pretty much that, I don't want to say old, but like that, like, originator vibe of creatives and management that was at the time in Atlanta. Those are all very good friends of mine.
Why were you down in Atlanta in the first place?
Because Atlanta was popping.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, I didn't know if there was anything, because you said, like, I was down in Atlanta for a minute.
So I would... So there was no Twitter, there was no Instagram, there was no way to connect with people. If somebody invited me to go anywhere in America, that would mean further my relationships. I would be on the first Greyhound bus or the first flight to get there. So if I would go to Atlanta for a party, like BET Awards, there was an after party at a club or at a strip club, no problem, I'll be there, jump on the first flight just to go to a party. If I went, as long as I had access to it, right. I would be there.
Did you ever like claim to be somebody else?
No.
Like to get in?
No, hell no. No. I was just like, I would just tag along with whoever invited me. So it's like, I'm in New York and Lotus was popping at the time, right? Mm-hmm. And so Daytona, I've known Daytona for a long time.
Yeah.
Tona was fucking with his crew. Lola New York, right? Okay. Which is a clothing line.
Yeah.
And so he'd be like, yo, my boy's got a table at Lotus. You want to come through? First Greyhound bus in 2006. First Greyhound bus out. I'd be at that party. I would stay in like a motel or a hotel in New York City, and then I would be back, you know, back to Toronto.
Wow.
And that was a party. That wasn't like meeting industry people, but I was in New York. I was getting to meet Daytona's friends and this person and that person. So Brooklyn, there was a Brooklyn festival one time, 2007.
There were so many Brooklyn festivals.
But it was one where I met, the first time I met Ghostface Killah, I was with Graf. Graf was performing. Yeah. So I was like, you'll come through. And I was like, okay, 2007. Came down. I was crashing in Brooklyn at my friend's house in Bed-Stuy, and then went to this Brooklyn festival with Graf, and that's where I met Consequence for the first time, and I met Ghostface for the first time as well. So I would just go down wherever I could. So Atlanta, there was a BT Awards happen every year in Atlanta, been happening since 2006. Mm-hmm. So my first time in Atlanta was 2006. So 2008 is when I moved there. 06 was when I first went for BT Awards. And then since then, I went to Atlanta four times a year at minimum, just to go for a party. If like a producer, if Polo was like, hey, I'm in the studio next week working with whatever artist, you want to come through? Yep. Mm-hmm. No problem. I never had a, like, my job was always part-time. So I would leave, if I was in university and it wasn't a weekend, I would go. So all the money I made, I literally would spend it on a flight or hotel or whatever I could just to be there. Because there was no Twitter, there was no FaceTime, there was no, Skype was the closest thing, you know what I mean? So I used to know a lot of I still do know a lot of the Atlanta people's, like Drama, Holiday. I've known them for a very long time.
Yeah.
I brought Holiday the first time in Toronto. I'm the one that brought him. DJ Infamous, I brought him to Toronto for the first time ever. Jason Jeter, Young Dro, Big Boy, Rick Ross. I brought them in Toronto for the first time to do parties.
Crazy.
Because I was like, these are people that are popping in America. I'm going to write about them in Canada and I'm going to bring them. So I would write about them, do interviews. Like if I got a chance to interview Waka Flocka, I'll fly to Atlanta on a problem, I interview you. And then I'd come back to Toronto and people were like, oh shit, you know, do you know? There was no way to know people in Canada. So you tell somebody, I'm gonna bring you into an international market, automatically they're like, yeah, you're my plug. So without knowing it yet again, I became the plug or the connector for Toronto.
Amazing.
Back when internet wasn't as accessible because people needed to get to the market.
Also,
so yeah, go ahead.
No, I love, like, you, like us, know the value of showing your face.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
just being everywhere where you have
just
to be,
just being there,
it matters so much.
Yeah, it does. Like I remember, so
like, you know Lola? Yeah, I know Lola. Like, you, yeah, know, of course I met her here or there, wherever.
Yeah, I literally would just go wherever I could. But like, it would be, I used to work with Little X as well. So X had a company called Maximus Entertainment. So I used to do online marketing for Maximus. They did the biggest parties during Caravana weekend in Toronto. So Maximus would be like, I would come back from Atlanta, and me and Taj, who's a creative director for X, me and Taj would talk, and Taj would be like, okay, so who's popping? Like, what's going on? And I'm like, so listen, I just interviewed Rick Ross. What do you think if we bring him down? It's like, well, can you get a number on him? Yeah, let me call his manager real quick. I kept in touch with him. Mm-hmm. So I'd go back to them and be like, hey, do you want to come to Toronto for Caravana? I have an offer for you. They'd be like, yeah, it's an international market. Fuck it, let's go. Same thing with like Jay Jeter. Yo, I want to bring you to Toronto. We're doing a party for Caravana. Let's bring Young Dro and Big Boy. And me and Dro, I remember like one time when I was in Atlanta, I was driving around with 8-Ball from 8-Ball and MJG. And I'm like, to this day, I sit here and I'm like, how did I even know all these people? Like, I don't understand how.
A waste of time with It's The Real's 12 Days of Podcast is sponsored by our friends at Def Jam Recordings, who have been steadily putting out the best hip-hop and R&B releases this holiday season. There's four projects I want to highlight for you guys as we get into the last days of the holiday shopping experience. First, Friday on Elm Street, the collaboration album between Fabolous and Jadakiss, which features bars on bars on bars over amazing production by Swiss Beatz and a whole bunch of others, including friend of the podcast, Ted Smooth. Trip, the new album from Jhené Aiko, which is now available on vinyl and features the songs Sativa and When We Were Young. The messaging and vibes make this the perfect gift for your loved one. Go get that now on vinyl. Bartholomew, the brand new album by the genius Jesse Boykins III, featuring guest appearances by Sid, Bridget Kelly, Trinidad James, Melanie Fiona, and more. And of course, Pressure, the dope new project from the snowman himself, Jeezy. Besides the fact that it has amazing features like T Grizzly, Puff Daddy, 2 Chainz, Rick Ross, Trey Songz, Tory Lanez, YG, Kodak Black, Kendrick Lamar, J. Cole, and more, you know Jeezy brings fire flames to his inspirational lyrics. This classic Jeezy, Pressure, is available everywhere you can stream music, as well as GZShop.com, where you can go right now and cop some exclusive merch bundles, including the pressure hoodies that Jeezy's been rocking on all of his media appearances. And don't forget, Jeezy's Cold Summer Tour featuring T Grizzly is starting up in February and hitting 31 cities, so gear up for that. Make these holidays happy and celebrate the Def Jam way. You become Toronto's sort of like mayor. I mean, you really...
Well, not really.
but you, did you feel like the sort of tides changing? Did you feel like it was becoming more of a...
Destination,
yeah.
Yeah, it became more accessible. That's really what it became. And I realized that when I started booking DJs, so I started doing parties as well. And then I would say, okay, the club has a $2,000 budget or $3,000 budget. Let me reach out to my DJ from Atlanta. You know, Holiday at the time, for example, was Gucci Mane's DJ. So Gucci Mane's popping. Hey, why don't we bring Gucci Mane's DJ down to Toronto to spin? And they'd be like, okay. When I started seeing the people that I was fucking with in Atlanta being brought to do other events, or when I was seeing similar events happening around the city, that's when I noticed that it became, okay, people were reaching out to the same people. And then when I was doing concerts and I was seeing the same artists being booked by other promoters or other people coming up doing events, whether they failed or they succeeded, it just became kind of like an open market for everybody to go to. And it became one of those things where a lot of artists were trying to get into Toronto. And they wanted to have the Toronto wave kind of mm-hmm. thing, you know, mm-hmm. and not just because we had amazing artists coming out of the city, but because our fans were diehard core supporters for some of these artists. So when my first Big Sean footage came out and he was crying at the Stussy store and people saw that in America, they were like, yo, that's the kind of fans that live in Toronto? Mm-hmm. Oh, we all want to go to Toronto. We want to experience that, you know? And so it became a destination, not just for people to come and scout artists, but for artists to come and kind of connect with their fan base and create sort of a hype. I did French in 2011 with 2,500 people. French had never done a show. He was doing strip clubs in the Bronx.
Right.
And in Atlanta, like, he was doing clubs, he wasn't doing show performances. So I did, French did a full 45 minute set, a full rehearsal. He was like, oh, this is a show. I was like, yeah, this is a show. But he did 2,500 people. You know what I mean? So he was like, I want to keep going back. And after that, French came to Canada every single year, twice a year, wow. three times a year sometimes to tour. So it became a destination city for fans and for
people. Was French the first artist that you would say you aligned with?
No, because I worked with artists who I was already aligned with. I worked with French longer mm-hmm. Or post show. But everybody that I did a show with, I had a relationship with. Like mm-hmm. It wasn't like I wanted to find somebody who was hot and popping and I wanted to do a show with them because I was trying to make money. Mm-hmm. I simply would find an artist that I think, like Big Sean, I was invited, I did an interview with him over, I used to have this interviews called iChat Sessions, and I interviewed Sean from one of my iChat Sessions, and his manager at the time, Dillaman, said, yo, we have a show at ESLB's, you should come through. Hopped on the Greyhound, came through. I think it was 2010 or 2011, I don't remember. And I went to see him at SLB's perform, and I literally was like dumbfounded.
Yeah.
Yo, this is crazy. And I wasn't really doing rap shows like that. Back in Toronto, we were doing parties, but not really rap shows for underground indie artists or underground artists. Mm-hmm. So I was like, but I'm looking at the fans and I'm like, I know who these fans are. I know where they shop. I know where they live. I know what they like. They're college kids. They shop at Stussy. They shop at Bape. They like this kind of brands. So I'm like, I want to do Sean in Toronto. And I was like, hey, Dilla, can I book Sean in Toronto? I want to do his first show. And so, but I had a great relationship with Dilla Man, and me and Sean, like, I love him. He's a super dope person. So he really welcomed me like, yo, thank you for coming through. Like, you showed us mad love. So we did the first show in Toronto, and then I did Sean's second show in Toronto as well. So we did 500 people the first time around. Then 3 months later, we did 3,000 people, you know? So, and he had just did my last, was a song with Chris Brown?
Oh, yeah.
He had mm-hmm. just
yeah.
released that.
Yeah.
So yeah, it like, it really became a partnership. It wasn't so much I'm doing a show so I can make money. It was every single one of my shows was a partnership. It was never I'm going to book somebody and do something and make money and we go our separate ways.
So we know that the bigger shows that exist in Toronto. What are some of the smaller venues that that were popping at the time?
So I did my show with Rich Hill at Wrong Bar. Which sold out, and that was amazing. That was in 2012. I did my first show with Sean at Revival. That was 500 capacity. Revival was really cool for events. That's the first place I met Drake, actually. It was 2000 and long time ago.
How was that interaction when you met Drake?
So, excuse me. It was cool. I was hosting. I was a host at the time. I had long hair, and I was hosting for this other rapper, an event for this other rapper. And he was like, "Hey, this is Drake. Hey, nice to meet you." But it was very 2005. Yeah. That's when it was. It was very long time ago. I don't remember. Really,
you just kept it moving. And
no, we kept in touch. Like, we at MSN was popping at the time in AOL. So we talked after that, and it was like, "Hey, this is Lola from Up Canada. Hey, what's up, Drake? You know, rapper." Mm-hmm. I pretty much knew everybody in the city. I just didn't talk to everybody in the city. Mm-hmm. Or like, I knew every artist that was coming up. We all knew each other. It wasn't like I knew them. We all just knew each other.
That's dope.
We knew of each other, and so it wasn't like, oh, I'm meeting this new rapper for the first time. I was like, I know you, I've seen you around. We go to the same parties. Mm-hmm. We party the same clubs. We know we frequent the same events. And so, hey, good to finally meet you, whatever. It's the same thing as here, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, that's what it was.
When did you first meet A-Track?
I interviewed him for Hip-Hop Canada, actually. Okay. Yeah, in 2005 or 2006. Mm-hmm. He was Kanye's DJ at the time. Yeah. So that's when I interviewed him. I don't know when I met him. I don't even remember when I met him. But I met him post Hip-Hop Canada era.
Right.
When I was here more.
Can you give us a good Gabi story?
Gabi?
Yeah.
No, I don't. There's too many stories. I can't even recall one very good one. My flight to Japan. We were flying from Japan. Japan or South Africa?
A long
South
flight,
Africa. Yeah. We were flying from South Africa, and there was two seats empty. And Gabi wanted to sit on the seat next to me. And I don't know if you know what Gabi looks like. He's a big man. Okay, takes up room. And I was like, Gabi, just go away from me. I want to be by myself. Why are you trying to squish up with me? I got so heated. It was a long flight. It was like a 12-hour flight. I was so upset.
He's got one of the funnier Instagrams that exist. Like,
Gabi is, he has such a good heart. He has such a big heart. He is such a compassionate person. He is so awesome. It has been a privilege, and it was amazing working with him.
Yeah.
He's literally like a big brother, a mentor. You could really call him at any time. You can really talk to him about anything. I absolutely love him.
What does French Montana mean to you?
An amazing friend. No, working with French.
Right, so
he is a positive influence in my life. Now, French is probably one of the most positive people that I know. And throughout the past, I don't know how many years of us working together, I've known him since 2007, by the way.
Wow.
Through all the years of us, like, you know, working together, he has constantly just uplifted me and people around him. And he always wants to do better. So he's always just trying, wanting to work harder, and just always kind of pushing and striving to be better for not just him, but for people around him. And he's always just positive. A lot of times we will bump heads because I would always be like, French, you gotta do this. You have to do this. And this has gotta be done like this. And I remember being on tour across Canada with him, and I'm like, no to everybody. No, no, you don't go on stage. Get off the stage. Get off the side. Meanwhile, he's just happy, like, yeah, bro, come on stage. Come on. I'm like, no, you don't go up there. And so he's just like, chill, be happy. It's a vibe, we family. So he's just very positive, and he loves everybody, and he likes to make everybody happy, and he's very comfortable, and he cracks jokes. And if you see interviews of him, they're so much fun.
Yeah.
And then here's me.
What screw face in the back?
What's the difference? What's the difference between shot caller French and pop that French and
unforgettable French?
Unforgettable. French.
Yeah, do we mean like that? That does kind of.
Well, I was gonna go even like
Well. Shot caller French is strip clubs. Mm-hmm. Pop that is
strip clubs.
No, pop that is Drake, Rick Ross, and Wayne, and live in Miami. So you go, you know what? I got this. I got it. What was the strip club that was popping here?
Sin City.
Sin City. Okay.
That
so
was never popping.
Well, Sin City's been around longer than most strip clubs. So Shot Caller French is Sin City.
Yep.
Pop That French is Live in Miami. Mm-hmm. Unforgettable French is on tour with The Weeknd.
Yeah.
It's a glow up.
That's pretty good.
That's the glow up. That's pretty good. That's the hella glow up. But mind you, the fans that love French still love shot collar French.
Yes, we do.
Yes, agreed. Yes.
I 100%. Still love shot collar French. I still love Return of the Mac French.
Oh, yeah. Same.
That's what. That's same. My favorite song.
The best. Okay, so obviously, like everybody loves like Mark Morrison. But
the better version.
When we aux cord DJ somewhere and we put on that French version, people just like
I do the same.
It's the best.
It is embarrassing, but I do the same.
No, it's not embarrassing. It's so good.
It's funny because people who don't know that that's a French record will like sing the Mark Morrison record, and I'm like, no.
Yeah.
No,
that's who, by the way, is Canadian royalty, right?
Really? So, I didn't know that.
Mark Morrison?
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Right?
I don't know.
I'm
possibly Google this and then let's address
somebody
it afterwards.
Somebody leave a comment. I'm not going to look it up. What is the latest that French has been to an interview or event?
Can I plead the fifth? Never. He's never late. He's early. He's on time. What are you talking about? Different artists.
Also, so by the way, Mark Morrison's from West Germany and England, so never mind.
No, but he's Canadian royalty. They love him there. That's like David Hasselhoff in Germany.
Oh, well, then okay. I don't know that. Albanian, when I speak Italian. How was Sailor Moon? I don't know.
When did you first meet Julius Caesar?
Oh,
that's
my
a
goodness.
Good question. That's a really good question.
Julius Caesar, I met him in 2014.
Is he a well-behaved monkey?
What's the latest he's been to an interview?
never late. Yeah. Julius Caesar's always early. He's prepared. Is he a well-behaved monkey? Well, he's a monkey. So, yeah, as far as monkeys go, I would say he's well-behaved.
Oh, good.
But, yeah.
Wait, still when you were monkey. In Dubai, did you feed the same monkey that everyone was feeding? Like Biggs was feeding a monkey and Julia Lang was feeding a monkey and...
No.
No?
I didn't feed any monkey.
No.
I just missed
opportunity.
Not really.
Let's go back to Dubai.
I was in the desert with four-wheelers and I was sat by the pool for a long time.
Your Instagram stories are constantly great.
Awesome, thank you.
On those four-wheelers, though, in the desert, though, that's pretty amazing.
Jackie here would text me and be like, live your best life, girl. Love it. I was like, yeah, I'll live my best life. No, it is. I landed in Dubai, and all the times that like French or other people had been in Dubai, I had never gone. And I landed in Dubai, and I literally called my parents, and I was like, thank you for bringing me to Canada.
Aww.
Like, because being like from the country I come from, without being able to. I think when I upload pictures of Dubai to my Facebook, like my Albanian relatives will be like, oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
I could never fathom the idea that I would be in such a place. It is magical. It's almost like a dream.
Mm.
You literally land and you see the Burj Khalifa and you see these tall ass buildings and they don't have the same shape as like New York, you know? And the streets are like, there's no potholes anywhere. There's no bumps. Shit is... Excuse me, smooth.
Yeah.
And there's like there's one street in the business district with like marble almost. Like the car is like rolling. It's like shining. It's like reflecting. It's so beautiful. And then you go to the Dubai Mall and everything is pretty and pristine and proper and lit and like lit. Yeah, literally. Yeah.
Literally.
So you're
lit.
Like, yeah. And then you have like a fountain, like a, you have a, there was a show of like, what are those things? The sparkles. What are they called? Fireworks.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. They have
fireworks.
Fireworks
like the gunshots.
Show.
Yeah.
Fireworks. They had like a fireworks show and like it's just so beautiful and the people are so kind, like whether they're local people or whether they were immigrants working there, because people were saying that everybody in Dubai is not from there, like the local population is really low.
Right.
The hotel I was staying at, these people like literally ran at the chance to like take my bags and I didn't even have a chance to be like, no, it's okay, I got it. I was like, okay, all right, yeah. And they were so nice. It was like, oh, it was almost their honor or their pleasure to make sure that you were happy and you were like good. Whereas here, by here, I don't mean New York. I just mean here, even Canada sometimes.
North America,
even other countries sometimes. People are like, yeah, what you want? I'll get the bags, ma'am. Yeah. I have Uber drivers who have literally left me to take my bags out by myself. They haven't even helped me out.
Mm.
Like there, that wasn't happening.
Well, I would just like to apologize.
You should, on behalf of all the population.
Yeah. No, well, Uber drivers. For, you know, being a bad Uber driver, please rate me 5 stars next time.
Yeah.
I'll do better.
Belly is another friend of yours.
Yes.
And he had a hell of a year this year.
He did.
And I feel like last year.
Yes.
And what is the difference between Belly from 10 years ago, who is winning, you know, those Juno Awards, and now? I mean, it's
Does
not...
Does he still care about the Junos?
I don't think so. No, I'm sure he does. Let's not diss the Junos. I think recognition is recognition no matter where it comes from. People appreciate it regardless. I think that the belly from then, the belly from now, understands himself and his audience a little bit better. And that's really all it is.
Wow.
So,
and so that's why Roc Nation takes an interest, and that's why The Weeknd takes an interest. And
well, no, The Weeknd, I mean, all those people kind of know him as a person. Mm-hmm. And they, Belly is an has an infectious personality. He is so much fun. Also, that's why he and French are friends. So, fun fact, French brought Belly out on that first show in Toronto that we did together in 2011.
Wow.
Yay. And he went to that Belly listening party that he did with The Weeknd was there in 2011 back then.
Wow.
Fun fact. So.
Is that all through you?
Partially, yeah.
But why? But I think there is something about like knowing yourself and having that self-confidence that makes other people want to work with you.
Belly was always funny. People just didn't see how funny and charming. He always made jokes. Sometimes at my expense. I love him anyways. But he was just always very funny and charming, and I don't think that everybody got to see that. And so as he progressed and as he kind of like discovered what he who he wanted to be or who he was through music, I think people kind of got a glimpse of how awesome he was as a person as well. And that's why people gravitated towards him and fans gravitated towards him. And I think he just, I don't want to say discovered the music he wanted to make. I think he always made amazing music. It just, it was a reflective of his state of mind at the time when he was making it. And so this year, it was all those things combined together, the hard effort and work he put in and the music that he was making. And it, people just got a chance to really find out more about him as a person, and his personality shown through in the interviews he did, in the press, and the shows. Partially Jackie's work here, that's her project. She's the project manager for my team on Belly. And just like doing some of the right stuff and going the right places and talking to the right people. And him and The Weeknd have been friends since a long time, seven years wow. now, maybe more. And so they're friends first, you know. Mm-hmm. At Roc Nation, I wasn't there when he signed, so I can't tell you, but mm-hmm. I just know that the team at Roc Nation takes an interest in him because they actually like him. They like working with him. He makes it easy. He's not a difficult guy, you mm-hmm. know. So I think that's that.
Where were you when The Weeknd cut his hair?
I was not there. I know that.
Yeah.
I was surprised like everybody else. I saw it on social media.
Okay.
Sad to say. He didn't send me a selfie and say, Lola, cut my hair.
Well, no, or the video, right? Like, wasn't that?
Was there a video? I don't know. I don't remember.
Well, no, not the video of cutting his hair, but like actually.
Oh, the music the first, video. Yeah, it was the video. Was it Starboy?
Yeah, Starboy.
Yeah. Yeah. That was it. No, I wasn't there when he cut it. I saw the video like everybody else.
How does it feel to watch all of your babies sort of grow up and become who they are?
I don't know. Jeez, that's a very loaded question. It is exciting to be a part of that journey, and it's exciting to see how far people could go. And I look forward to hopefully building more of that and just seeing more of that and seeing the culture where it's going. We were talking about this earlier, from like the Chicago drill movement to some of the more commercial artists to what's happening now, and just kind of seeing all those movements progress and being there in the first conversations and the first features and the first tweets and the first Instagram, like Twitter wars or whatever, and shows and productions. That is so inspiring to me. It's sad that years pass so fast, you know, mm-hmm. and it's sad that like a lot of the times you can't get back those small and intimate moments, especially with like live shows, because the feeling you get at a live show and a person's first run is not the same as you get when you watch a big right. stadium performance. It's more finessed and refined. And even though when an artist comes out early on and things are a little more hectic and not as properly presented and put together, they're a little more authentic and raw, you know, and you kind of see that as a fan. And so when the person grows, it become bigger.
Sure. Well, what excites you these days?
Nothing. Dead inside.
Stop it.
Yeah, no, that's that goth Lola.
Dubai. Yeah, yeah. Dubai, four-wheelers in the desert. No, yeah. I'm just joking. Living my best life. Yeah. No. What excites me, to be honest, is people. seeing young women being inspired by my story, and young men really, but young people being inspired by my story and just not knowing that they could make things work for themselves, and giving them a sort of like a stepping stone or a guidance, that kind of makes me really, really happy. Accomplishing things, honestly, putting a task and being like, I did this today, being creative, coming up with ideas and executing them, that's what makes me happy. It doesn't have to be artists, it doesn't have to be music, just getting ideas done and executing them really makes me happy.
We didn't talk about this, but what is the first rap song that you loved?
All the Small Things.
No, it was Ludacris, not Blueberry Yum Yum. It was I Wanna Lick You From.
Oh, yeah.
So what song is that? And I Wanna you make so good, I won't leave, but I gotta.
What's
your fantasy? And T.I., King of the South, maybe? Mm-hmm. Like those early on. I can't remember the exact song.
I hope you told T.I., like when you saw him in L.A., you're like, yo, like, you know.
That was my favorite music.
Yes.
No.
Why
not? I didn't tell him. No, I didn't tell him.
Life is too short. You should tell people.
No, because it's like.
It's not corny.
I don't know. I just don't remember. Really, because I don't know for a fact that was Missy Elliott. I was a huge Missy Elliott fan. I can only think of artists and era. I can't really think of like when, what the first song I heard was. I really don't. No, Dr. Dre.
Okay.
It has to be Dr. Dre, Eminem, Stan.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Those would probably be, or Jay-Z.
Yeah?
I don't remember, but because those were earlier than the Atlanta era, right?
Yeah, that was like 2001.
2001, Dr. Dre was 2001.
Yeah.
And then when was T.I.'s King of the South? Or
what was that?
2003, right?
Yeah.
It was like, yeah. So it was Dre definitely first, and Eminem. It was like that era. I listened to Exhibit. I listened to a lot of Exhibit and a lot of Snoop Dogg and a lot of Dr. Dre. So what's
Did you watch Pimp My Ride?
Yes, I definitely did.
In Italian?
No, in English.
I do want to go back to Toronto for a second because...
I'm getting Toronto artists by the loads coming to me like, sign me.
I bet.
Like, so many.
Like, I mean, it's just, it's night and day between when you were starting your career in Toronto where it is now.
Yeah,
but it's still a destination, though.
No, it's not. It's not. It's just the type of music is different. And the development of the artist. It's crazy. It's crazy because I'm like visualizing it right now. Back in 2005 when I started writing for Hip Hop Canada, it was the same landscape, but different clothing, different styles, different rap, different aesthetics, different everything. But there was still a hip hop culture there.
Yes.
And now there's a lot more artists. They're just different type of rap.
Totally.
But it's the same shit.
But Drake throws a whole weekend now.
Right.
No pun intended. Like that all of these artists.
You might want to rephrase that.
Yes.
Drake throws a whole weekend of OVO.
Right. Correct.
Just joking.
But the OVO Fest is something where all these rappers, all the ones you brought up, have performed on his stage. This is something where it's like branded around him. It is something where like all these artists fly in from across the world to be there, and all eyes are on that now. That's got to be, I'm sure, satisfying on some level for you as someone who grew up there and saw what it was when there wasn't that spotlight there.
Drake has an amazing team of visionaries around him that have been able to create some amazing concepts or awesome concepts and bring magical moments to the city of Toronto with every OVO Fest. I sound like I'm a spokesperson for OVO Fest. with every OVO Fest. And so, like I said, the Puff reunion tour, before Puff went on tour, the reunion was in Toronto, him and Mace. And to me, that was like, yo, mind blowing. And then obviously when he brought Jay out and he brought Connie out, and those were all magical moments. So yeah, what he's been doing with OVO has been incredible.
Well, we talked a lot about people that you do like. Now just list every single person you don't like.
That list is short. I can name like two or three people.
Oh my God.
No, I'm just joking.
Me and Eric.
Yeah. No, you guys are cool. You guys are all right.
Can you talk about...
I'm on air, I have to say that.
Yeah, no, exactly. You're in our apartment.
Can you talk about Lemon?
Lemon is incredible. She is a... Look at Jackie smile. She is a singer, songwriter, producer that I met in Toronto a year ago. I heard her music randomly through Twitter, actually. I actually was asking people to send me stuff that they liked, and I found her and this other girl from Sudbury, I forgot wherever Justin Bieber's from. I think it's Sudbury. And YouTube. And they were both incredible. And then I sat down at a dinner with some friends of mine, and you know, somebody just said, "Why don't you manage?" I was playing her music, and they were like, "Why don't you manage her?" And I was just like, okay. So me and John Minnelli decided that we were going to partner together.
Amazing.
And we were going to start, we wanted to work on something together. We just didn't have anything to work on at the time. And so then I played her songs and I was like, you want to do it? He's like, all right. And so we kind of, I went, met with her in Toronto. I liked her vibe. I flew her to New York. She played me 50 records already written and recorded. And I was like, oh, who produces? She's like, me? Who wrote them? Me? Who recorded them? Me? Oh, okay. Let's bring you back here so that you can, you know, do some more work. And so she's been recording more, and now we're ready to just really, you know, build her.
Amazing.
Yeah, I'm excited about her, and I'm looking to like find, I want to do more creative things, like I said, not necessarily just artist driven. Of course, I want to find the next big star and work with the next big star, but I really just want to create cool shit. And yeah, I find that a lot of stuff is manufactured nowadays, that a lot of brands, companies. When I went to Dubai, the key word that kept coming up was influencer, influencer, influencer.
Still?
A lot of what? Everywhere. The word influencer, companies, all they know is influencer. That's the word that comes up. You have 500, you have 1,000 followers, you're an influencer. I just told Jack, I said, you have 3,800 followers, you're an influencer, girl. Yeah.
Three times over.
Get that bread.
Yeah.
So it was like, oh, we have influencers. Like, I went to a hotel. We have influencers that come by and they love taking selfies at our hotel. Who the fuck cares? You know what I mean? You either have a good hotel or you don't. You know? Yeah. And so...
And plus, like, you can be an influencer all you want. You got to have clout.
You have to actually... I just asked that on my Instagram, and I was like, what is an influencer? Like, is somebody who influences, somebody who has followers? Like, what makes somebody an influencer? And so...
I was born an influencer.
I was born a goddamn influencer, all right?
Yeah. But, say it in Italian.
No. I can't even say it in Albanian. Yeah. The word influencer does not exist, I think. I don't know if influenza. No, it does. I think.
No, influenza.
That's the flu. Gets you sick. Well, that's appropriate.
Sick.
Yeah.
Lola's pretty sick.
Yeah. Well, I think that influencers make me throw up, so that's about right.
But yeah, no, I just want to do some really dope stuff outside of like the term influencer and shit, and really just like find out what it is that matters to people and how to hone in on it and kind of create just cool vibes and make the artist a part of it. I love discovering artists that are just dope and just really good music and not people that everybody's just kind of like vibing with because they're cool. What I'm starting to find out with baby acts is that the media doesn't really care to discover the newest, the latest shit. Everybody says they want to, but they really don't. Most writers and editors don't take a chance on just good music. I'm using parentheses. Is this parentheses or quotes?
Quotation marks.
What is this? Yeah. What's parentheses?
That's like this. Yeah.
Quotation marks.
This is just really good
English
radio.
English is my third language. Okay? I learned Italian watching TV. Cut me some slack.
You speak the Queen's English, right?
Yes, I speak the Queen's English. So in quotation, I'm using quotation. Air, whatever
quotation.
When quotations.
You say recognize, it's with an S.
Anyways, media say that they want to find the latest talent, but they really don't until somebody else co-signs it, or like they get streams already, or they're cool, or they're, you know, somebody that they fuck with is fucking with them. It's really hard to find people, influencers, media, tastemakers, whoever, who genuinely just say, I like this, and I'm going to go out there and tell the world that I support it.
Well, who shares that mind state with you, you think?
Nobody. Jackie. Hello, Jacqueline. I'm building my team. The way I want to build my team is I hope that I can grow to a point where I can have an HR department and a company that actually does development for brands and creatives down the line. That's really my goal with Lola Media Group. But until I get to that point, I want to be a part of every single person that comes and joins my team and everybody that's a part of my family. I want them to have the same perspective and mind frame. And so when I get intern requests or people that want to work with me, the first thing I look for is how do you build the people, like with the people around you? How do you treat people around you? What matters to you? You know, and so I don't care who has the same mind frame as me, as long as my team does. You know what I mean? So if the world has 1,000 people that care about curating really cool shit and care about authentic shit, that's amazing. That's even better for everybody. I don't want to be the only one, because then I'm fighting a battle that I'm never going to win. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to have other people like that. I'm not going to, you know, point out, oh, this person's like this. I'm sure there are people out there. What matters the most to me is that those people are on my team. You know, so.
Are you still the same person who called up HMV and called up United Way and got everyone on board for that first show?
Fuck yeah. Well, yeah, we're so what we do at Lola Media Group is build artists literally from the, like, what I want to do is, there's no task that's too big or too small. So if my team and I, or primarily my team, has to call every HMV in the country or every store in the country to carry or play my artist's music, then that's what the hell we're going to have to do. So it's not, I'm not too big. I'm not too poppin'. I'm not too important to ever have a conversation with somebody or call somebody. If that's what I have to do, that's what I have to do. Mm-hmm. And that's a mentality that I want everybody around me to have.
That's dope.
How important is it to you to build up your brand as opposed to your artist brand?
Well, see, that has been the problem all these years, is that I have had a brand and I've constantly put my brand in my back burner. And what happens is that when you don't prioritize your brand and you prioritize the artist, when you don't work with that specific artist anymore, your brand goes to shit and you can't use your brand to develop the next artist. So you're kind of fucked. And so what I don't want to do is, I think I'm an amazing person. I think that I have some qualities that I can't explain.
Because it's in a different language?
No, because I can explain those. No, I just, I can't, I don't know what makes me good at my job or bad in my job, but I know that I am special in a way at doing what I do, and I don't ever want to forget that without me, there's no them. So I can't help anybody. You know, when you go on an airplane, they say, put your mask on first. If I'm not successful, I can't make anybody else successful. Mm-hmm. Because then your success is tied to that one person. The reason why I can be working with nobody right now, and I can still sit down and share my journey, my stories, and my experience with people, and hopefully people give a fuck, is because I'm strong enough as a person and as a brand. So yeah, I for the past however many years, I focus on building others, and I still want to continue doing that, but simultaneously I'd love to
link,
while I'm focusing
right, yeah,
more on building my brand. Yeah.
What is the real definition of a manager?
Well, no, I don't even want to get into that, because I can't say that I really know. You know what I mean? Like, I really just got into it. I think that people different people have different, a manager is really somebody, if you're able to answer your phone and answer some emails, you're a manager, basically. Because I've seen managers who all they do is just answer. Depending on who you ask, the task or the definition of a manager might differ. I think that I've been doing it for a long time without realizing that I've been doing it, but I didn't actually have a title for it until recently. And I just discovered by working in it that, you know, when your artist is growing, you have to build character for them before you build a persona, because they're not, some artists are just born stars and some artists are just regular kids and people who make amazing music, but they don't know the industry, and you kind of have to shape them. And so you learn this, like, coaching, and you become a mother and a nurturer. And though I've been that person for such a long time, you now are responsible for this person's success. You're responsible for, you know, what they do when they wake up in the morning and how they're perceived the world and how equipped they are to deliver the work that you need them to deliver. And so there's this misconception, everybody wants to be a manager, and I want to do dope shit. I don't just want to say, oh, I'm a manager, you know, like, I don't care about that. And I think over the years my not giving a fuck attitude, or my lack of giving a fuck, hasn't given me titles, and I've always just been the quiet person in the background, because I've just always wanted to get shit done. So yeah, I don't know, I just want to put in the work, but it's hard.
What do you think expectations should be, not even for a manager, for a partner? What do you think expectations should be from the artist side?
Well, I mean, I think it has to be seen as a partnership. Recently, somebody that manages another artist said to me that I manage this artist, but we don't look at it as management. We look at it as a partnership, because if I'm putting in my time and my money and they're not meeting me halfway with the same effort, then there's no point of us being in this partnership. So that's the way they look at it, and that's the way I look at it. Not just a partnership with a partner that you're working with, but a partnership with the artist as well. And so when an artist gets into a management situation, they should look at, you know, what are this person's expectations and am I going to meet them? Or what are our expectations together? That's the first thing I look at. If I'm going to put in night and day of effort, then you should be putting in the same effort. And if you're putting in night and day and effort and I'm not putting the same amount of effort, then fire me, you know? And most people don't like that term or that idea of like getting fired or parting ways or whatever the case is. But it's like, yo, we're in this together. Like, we're building a future here.
Right.
I don't look at the money. I should. I've never been a money person. Like, oh, I'm going to make millions. And I look at like, can I change the fucking way people think? Can I do some dope shit? Can I build culture? Wow, I was a part of that moment. Like, that's what I want to be able to say, you know?
Well, people also need to understand that like time is way more valuable than money.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, so to waste time, a little nod to our podcast, to waste time is even more damaging than to not get the.
It's honestly frustrating. It's like you sit on your ass and you're like, yo, what did I just spend the last 5 years doing or a year or whatever the case is? And so, yeah, the expectation when going into anything, it's a partnership. And so I think that both people, and it's not just management, it's into anything really, is just what are our both combined expectations of this relationship and how is it going to work? And are we both ready to put in the combined effort that goes into it? And sometimes when you manage an artist, a brand or whatever it is, you have to have the same vision and the same diligence and work ethics and meet each other halfway. Then I don't think that people do all the time.
Mm-hmm. Have you met Asad?
No.
No. All right.
No, he was New Year's last year. French was hosting with Khaled, and Asad was asleep. Well, yeah. So.
Have you not met Asad because you don't want to meet Asad?
You know what?
You don't want to meet your heroes.
Yeah, just, I don't want, you know, I'm scared he's not going to know who I am.
Live up to expectations.
I don't. I was a little starstruck when I met Rihanna. I want to say
there you
that.
Go.
Yeah.
Like, your fellow Puma.
Oh my God. Are you kidding? Fellow what? I love her. I don't care what. I died. She kissed me on the cheek and was like, I love you. I was like, oh my God, I love you. No, oh my God. No, I love you. I never want to wash my face
She poured champagne
I love her
for
so
me.
Much.
But it wasn't like really pouring it for me. It was
she
more
just
like
poured
just
it, and
poured
then
it
got a glass
in my direction on my airplane seat.
Really?
Yeah, on the 777 plane. She sort of just like threw
champagne. Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. Oh, you were there. You were part of that?
Yeah. It was the worst. But she was great in that moment.
I heard some horrendous stories from that. My goodness. Mm-hmm. People still liked her though. That's so funny.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
It's so funny because people hated that experience. And all the reviews from that experience were like horrific.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Rolling Stone.
Yeah. Yes, that was you.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that was so bad. Yo, you're an asshole. But nobody was mad at Rihanna for it.
No.
No, mad at Def Jam.
Yeah, mad at somebody.
You know, everybody was mad at the execution.
Yeah.
But it did not make her less of a star or less likable.
No.
Because all of you guys had shit reviews. It wasn't like one person triumphed and said, I had an amazing time. It was like, we had no food. We were hungry. We landed
and
in London and nobody knew what we were doing.
That is terrible.
Yeah, it was horrendous. Oh, that was my experience with British Airlines recently. I wrote them this like 4-page email last night. I stayed up to like, well, not too late because I woke up really early. But I sent them a really long email and I was like, flight one, you did this. Flight two, you did this. I was so bad. So I get
did
it.
Did they respond?
Not yet, but they will.
That's a long letter.
It was very long. I was like displaced. Is that the right word? Where like you miss your flight and you're like you're not catching your flights. I'm at the airport for 10 hours. I'm on like a 10-hour layover. Like that kind of sucked. The flight was delayed. Then I landed in London. I was there overnight. Then I had to wake up in the morning, delayed again, come back to New York. It was bad.
So horrible.
Yeah, I can't really imagine. But what I'm saying is that even though those experiences and the reviews were so bad, nobody got mad at her. People are like, Queen, we love you.
She's the best.
Come to Brazil.
She poured champagne in my direction and I loved her even though that experience was horrendous.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was maybe the only time that I like was like, Rihanna, oh my God, I love her.
Yeah.
That's about it. Kim, meeting Kim and Kanye was really cool too. Kim is so nice.
Really?
Like, have you guys ever heard experiences?
No, I've heard that she's like really, really nice.
I was at the premiere of Famous, the video that Kanye did at LA, at the whatever the theater is.
Yeah.
And we were by the stairs. Everybody was going to go in. And Kim had just arrived. And she walked out of the car. And it was me and French's videographer at the time, Denise. We were standing kind of like to the side, like by ourselves. Like, we were just like, oh, we don't want to be in the way.
Yeah.
And she literally walked up the steps, walked up to us. She's like, hi, I'm Kim. Nice to meet you. And I'm like, I know who you are. Like, hi, I'm Lola. Nice to meet you. She's like, hi. And then to D, she's like, hi. Nice. With like a sweet voice. And D was like, hi. And D was like, yo, she just introduced herself. I was like, yeah, I know. That's crazy. We're like, she was so nice.
That's awesome.
We're literally backstage and we're eating popcorn. And French is on Ramadan, so he's fasting, mm-hmm. so he can't eat. And she's like, really? And she just didn't. It was like so. She was just so down to earth and so cool, and I just didn't expect that. I didn't know what to expect. Yeah. Really. I don't know. So that was, I wasn't starstruck. It was just like I was surprised. And
yeah, that's awesome.
Kind of like, wow.
So why is it ilovelola.net and not ilovelola.com?
Okay, it's ilovelola.net because ilovelola.com used to be a porn site. I couldn't buy it, and I didn't want to direct people to that. Well, no, it's not even just, I'm sorry, ilovelola.com
yeah.
was a porn site.
Right.
So I ended up, and the .net was taken as well.
And so that was not your site? Your site was not the porn site. Listen, there are people out there who are listening who are wondering, you know.
No, I don't know if it exists anymore, but it used to be a porn site or like some sort of fantasy seduction shit. I don't know. So it was ilovelola.com. And then.
It really should have been .com.
You're thank you. Well, whatever.
You like, I made a if big I point find
the yeah. own, right, yeah, if yeah. I find the owner of that old site, I'll send them over to you and give them some pointers. But yeah, and so I made ilovelola, mm-hmm. and the .com of that was taken as well. So I did ilovelola.net, and now I own
here you are.
.com yeah. and all of them.
Oh, do you really?
Yeah, ilovelova, all of that. I own all of that. I'm building my fucking empire. Fuck your porn site.
Lola, we're trying to get up to Toronto very soon, and when yes. we do,
call me.
We're gonna call you, and we want to go out for coffee and hamburgers.
You got it. We can go to A&W.
We have to go to every single HMV.
Yes, we can go and do some groundwork at HMV. Yes. Well, got it.
Congratulations on everything.
Thank you.
Everything you've done, everything that you're doing, and everything that you have on the way.
Thank you.
And we're really, really happy that you finally stopped by the podcast.
I'm so happy I was here. You guys are awesome.
Thanks, Lola.
Thank you, guys. Wait, no outro? That's your outro that you guys do? Yeah. So you do a really cool intro, and then your outro is, thank you very much, bye-bye.
No, but we meant it in our hearts.
Fine. No, we'll I know. I want a punchline. Yeah, I want a punchline. I was like, that was Lola. I love Lola.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to this new episode of A Waste of Time with It's The Real. Jeff, if people want to find out more about us, we're It's The Real. If people want to find out more about this podcast thing of ours, it's called A Waste of Time with It's The Real. If people want to know where, they can get tickets for our upcoming show at SOBs on January 10, 2018. Where can they go?
You can get all of your tickets to our SOB shows and honestly all upcoming shows at itsthereal.com. ITSTHEREAL. No apostrophes, no spaces. If you want to listen to our podcast, old episodes, new episodes, any episode you want, it is on iTunes. Search for A Waste of Time with It's The Real. We are also on soundcloud.com/awasteoftime. If you want to listen to our music, it is on every streaming platform, including Spotify, Google Play, Pandora, Tidal, all of them. Go search for Teddy Bear Fresh by It's The Real on any streaming platform, including soundcloud.com/itsthereal. If you want to find us on the internet, we are on Facebook at It's The Real, Twitter at It's The Real, Instagram at It's The Real, on Snapchat we are It's The Real, and on Twitch we are It's The Real, It's The Real.
Jeff, you know that this podcast will not go anywhere, no matter how far we push it, unless you guys, our loyal listeners, spread the word. So, we like to take the initiative and shout out 1, 2, or 8 of you out there in the hopes that you will tell just one friend. Tell one friend about this podcast, and you have done your job today. So, Jeff, which friend do you want to tell?
I don't have anybody specifically, but I do want to shout out the dozens of people who reached out to us on our Instagram Live, especially, and emails and messages and everything following the news of yesterday with Combat Jack. And the community that we've built here, we so appreciate all of our fans, everybody out there who has hit us up for various reasons in the past day, and we just want to say we thank you.
Perfectly said, Jeff. One time. for our guy, Reggie Ose. Combat Jack, Reggie Ose. Yes. Man, we really appreciate
Thank
you coming.
You. Yeah, I really appreciate
and coming
dinner.
With gifts. Yeah, yeah, you brought cookies, man.
Come on, man. You got to be internets. You guys got to be gracious. Where's your fucking humility? Where did who raised you? Come on, man. Let's bring some class to the game.
Shout out to your parents for raising you right.
No, thank you. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, where can people follow you on Twitter?
At @combat_Jack. But you can find me at the Combat Jack Show on iTunes, on SoundCloud. Has been a great partner. Stitcher. Just look us up. Google me. Use your Googles, you bastards.
Find Combat Jack at Sky Barn up in Syracuse.
Yo, yo. Sky Barn, high on mescaline.
57th Street Combat Damn. Jack.
Yeah. Internets don't do drugs. I did that so you wouldn't have to go through that.
Yo. No, but it got you into college.
No, right? Got me into law school.
Yo.
Mescaline.
Mescaline got you into law school.
I just hope I don't get my dean in trouble.
Yo. Thanks, Reggie.
Thank you, guys.
As always, not for real, for real.
Sure, sure.
We'll see you guys tomorrow.
Yes, we're back with Peter Rosenberg. This episode of the 12 Days of Podcast has been sponsored by the good people of Def Jam, who have dropped Jeezy's Pressure on Spotify, Google Play, Amazon, Pandora, and on JeezyShop.com. Go get some merch, go cop some tickets to his Cold Summer Tour with T-Grizzly, go write 1,000 Instagram comments on how you hope Jeezy's coming to perform in Brazil. Jeezy's got some amazing features on this album, and so do we on our episode tomorrow with Peter Rosenberg.